take the questions later. I'm sure there'll be some. Our next speaker, it seems entirely appropriate to ask the Director of the Institute of Space Policy and Law, Saeed Moshtar, to tell us about the current status of the OST. While Saeed is coming up here, I would say in your handout, there is more details about these individuals who you're going to see for your information, so it will save you some time reading them.
Yes, indeed. And also, I should mention that you will get a much fuller description of the vast experience of all these people after the seminar. We will send you a report also of the proceedings of today. I'm very glad that there are mentioned in closing that what is really necessary is a set of procedures to make space safe and sustainable for use on a continuing basis. The OSC, the Outer Space Treaty, is essentially a set of principles by which space activities are governed. And member states who have ratified that treaty abide by those rules, by and large. There are some aspects in which they don't. But what I would say is that the Outer Space Treaty does provide a very sound foundation for activities in outer space and for peaceful uses of outer space. It's often said that the space treaties are somehow inhibiting commercial activity and what is happening these days. What is happening and what has happened is really rests at the doors of people like Alan Smith, because the technology has improved enormously, and has reduced the costs have been reduced. So there are many more participants in space activities, but it is not the case that the Outer Space Treaty in any way inhibits commercial or private activity in outer space. By its very terms, it provides that states must supervise and authorize activities that are carried out by non-governmental entities. So it was foreseen that this would happen, that there would be a lot of other activities that were not governmental. So it isn't just the states that are bound by the terms of the Outer Space Treaty. It is passed on to the nationals of those countries. There is a growing number of countries that are ratifying the Outer Space Treaty. Of the 195 recognized sovereign states of the UN, 105 of them have already ratified, and as I said, more are doing so. Jarl also mentioned that the Outer Space Treaty doesn't stand on its own. It sets out those principles, but they are, if you like, details are added by other conventions and treaties, such as, for example, the Liability Convention. Although the Outer Space Treaty does frame that liability, makes states liable to pay damage for any damage caused by space objects, the Outer Space Treaty, Liability Convention expands on that and provides the details of how that occurs. Now, that's not to say that the Outer Space Treaty is absolutely perfect. I recognize that there are some things that could be a little better. We've I must have mentioned space already at least 2 dozen times, but I don't know legally where that is. And nobody does, because there is no legal definition agreed. Although it has been on the agenda of the legal subcommittee of the Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, the UN committee, since the 1960s, we haven't come to a conclusion as to where the limitation, where the boundary line is between airspace and outer space. But that has some consequences, not least more recent ambitions to provide space tourism, and you know, how far up do you have to go to be in space, and the liability provisions, of course, are different in the two areas. The other aspect of the outer space treaty that could have been a little bit simpler is the way that the liabilities and obligations attach to the states, because states are responsible for their national space activities. This is under the Outer Space Treaty. So you've got to decide whether it's your national activity and then to license and authorize and supervise it. But you have jurisdiction and control over that space object if it is an object that was that you have registered. And there can be a number of countries that could register, because these are launching states. Each launching state has a right to register. And generally what happens is that if there are several of them, they agree between them who registers it. And this causes a slight difficulty, not one that cannot be overcome, but that it just makes things a little bit complicated when satellites and space objects, satellites in particular, is happening more and more now, are that there is a change in ownership between entities of different nations. And if once it's on orbit, you're not necessarily, you could be transferred to a national of a country that had nothing to do with the launch. And so there has to be intergovernmental agreements as to how those things happen. But by and large, I would say that the Outer Space Treaty is in pretty good shape. There are details of provisions to be and procedures to be set out, and a lot of these are occurring mainly through non-binding guidelines and best practice provisions that are being developed by the committees, the two committees of the Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. Thank you.
Thank you, Sae.
So, without further ado, thank you for that. I invite our next speaker, Serge Petard, who is the Deputy Director of the UCL Space Domain, and Serge is going to tell us, give us a bit of a forward look on where this is all going into the future. So, I understand nobody has asked us 4 words, apparently, so it should be quite.
Thank you, Anne, for your kind words. I'm going to talk about what could we say about the loop. Looking forward to what has been described so far, particularly by Gerard, who indicated the main cornerstones through which space has developed. I'm sorry if I'm redundant with what Gerard said and Said said, but